afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining me today for Saturday Afternoon with Carolyn Yeager. I'm Carolyn, and the date is November 1st, 2014. So welcome to November also for all of us. It's quite fitting that to usher in this harvest and horn of plenty month, Thanksgiving month and all that, that I can welcome Margaret Hustickler to the show with a harvest of great music of the Third Reich. And I mean, talk about abundance and richness, that great National Socialist state really had it. So while I'm waiting for Margaret to call in, I will, and she can call in any moment now, I will say that I've been waiting for this show for a long time. We talked about it months ago, and but Margaret was doing some traveling and different lots of things happened in her life, and so but it finally came together for today, and we really have some good music to give to you, and she's got a lot of interesting things to tell you. Some of our composers that we're going to be discussing and playing are Richard Strauss and Brahms. And let's see, and conductors von Karajan, and we're going to do a little Wagner, but conducted by a great conductor by the name of Krauss. We're going to listen to Irma Berger, a wonderful soprano, opera soprano. We're going to listen to some lighter music and some popular music, and even some, we have a wonderful NS song to play for you. I'm going to go over to, and we do have a lot to play. I think she once said she was going to start with Strauss, which is a little clip, a little under 4 minutes, where he is he was recorded while he was in rehearsal, and she thought it was just interesting to hear him speak while he's talking to his orchestra members and so on. And some of the music is great, too. She didn't think we would play a lot of it, but I think I'm going to put that on and play that for you now. So this is the great German conductor and composer, Richard Strauss, in a rehearsal with, I forget now what they're rehearsing, but we probably will hear it. So this is what's coming up now. It's a little slow because it doesn't start right off the bat.
Tempo giocoso. Non andate in appello. Hey. Da. Who's that number to see?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is that was Richard Strauss. I hate to tell you, but we're having a problem with Margaret calling in, and I don't know if she's going to find a way to do it. And well, while I look at this, I'm going to start with Elizabeth Schwarzkopf. I mean, this one is 4 minutes and 33 seconds, so I know you will enjoy this.
Überwiesen und Felder kommen hin, glücklich schlug in das Herz, es glänzt in das Finger und golden Ring, Klang schlug in das Herz. Wiesen und Felder, wie seid ihr schön, o Berge, o Meer, wie schön.
Song is over. We're talking over it.
Well, I don't care about this song. I was interested in the Strauss.
Well, that was
Strauss. At last. At last. What have you played so far?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you know this is our guest, Margaret, and here we are going with our show now. Well, you know, I played Strauss. That was
great.
Strauss.
Yes, and how many have you played?
Well, I played the rehearsal to start with.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and then I played Elizabeth Schwarzkopf. So what do you want to tell
us
about those
Okay,
two?
Yes. First, well, I guess... did you talk anything about Strauss? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning.
No, I don't have any notes on anything like that. Just the general, that he was a very important, both a conductor and a composer.
That's right. And he was, as that article that I sent you said, he was not a reluctant performer. He performed for the country. He loved Germany. He had a Jewish daughter-in-law who he helped, as many people helped, relatives and, you know, associates who were Jewish. But basically, he was very patriotic. And, of course, he was both a wonderful composer and a conductor, and he was conducting his own works in that first piece, his own work, which was... It was incidental music. That's why it didn't sound a lot like a piece. It was meant to go with a play, which was Don Juan. So it's sort of like movie music in a way. But I thought it was an interesting clip to... You got a feeling of him talking to his orchestra and how he related to them. I thought it was very nice. He tells them... He hums part of it. Tum-tum, and he says... Tempo giocoso, that means jolly tempo. And we're starting from number T or P or something.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it's nice to hear his relationship to the audience. I think it'd be nice to be in an orchestra of his. And so these Strauss pieces are songs, and I've sung some of them, and he was a wonderful songwriter as well as a orchestral writer, and he continued to compose all through the Third Reich time.
And he never, there was at least once, I think there was a little bit of tension with him, but there was never any kind of a break, was there? And he always supported the regime as far as, you know, being a part of it.
That's
being a
right.
part of the artistic community there.
Yes, as most of them did, of course. I mean, as we would if we were composers in any country, pretty much. You perform at functions.
Yeah, but they didn't feel that they were so opposed that they had to leave and go somewhere else.
Oh,
you
he
know.
Had no intention of it. The Jews were begging him to, you know, because he was so prestigious, and they wanted mm-hmm. to think that when the Third Reich came to power, everything would fall apart, and it was... Exactly the opposite, because one interesting thing to keep in mind is that unlike what happened after the war, when many, many people were just booted out with nothing, no compensation, of course they do it right in Third Reich Germany, and people got their pensions, and people, when Jews were not wanted in musical and many of them were retained, of course, if they were important players, and even just standard players in an orchestra. But ones who didn't, there was actually a thing called the Judenbund. And so the Jews were still employed. They had their own orchestras, which means, which people don't really mention, that there was much more musical life, and there was much more employment in the arts and in music, especially under the Hitler's regime, than there was before that, when the Jews were, of course, taking up a little more than their necessary space. And yeah, as usual.
Necessary space.
Yeah, but when the military occupation came after the war, it was just hell for the people.
Yeah.
Then the tribunals that decided whether these people were allowed to work after the war, and all of them had to go through it, they were run by the military intelligence. It was called the Information Something Committee, and that was part of it was the Psychological Warfare Division. All of that was Jewish. It was the Information Control Division. It was the Psychological Warfare Division.
Mm-hmm.
And that was who was.
Go ahead.
And yeah. their interest being in psychiatry, which is, we know who runs that. I'll read a quote from an article on it. This book, by the way, is called Music and Nazism. Other books are called Music, Composers of the Nazi Era. Do you ever hear of a book about music in Soviet Russia called Composers of the Commie Era?
Yeah, no.
No, it's just, no. It's fair game. And, of course, we know it's all because of the so-called Holocaust.
Exactly right. When people say, well, why do they treat the Nazis different than the commies? Well, heck, because the Jews, the Nazis were against the Jews and the commies were the friends of the Jews. So
yeah,
that's why.
Or often the Jews themselves, yeah.
They were, yeah. Yeah, but,
yes.
You know, I mean, the commies were never against Jews, never, and still aren't.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have them, you know, objecting to the fact that people worked in that government when, you know, tens of thousands of Gentiles were killed. They don't say, oh, they were collaborating. And let me read you, let me see, where is this?
Yeah, you had something to read.
The Twisted Muse, to just publish these books, of course, with a standard publisher, you have to have names like this and you have to have thoughts like this. It's called The Twisted Muse, Musicians and Their Music in the Third Reich. Here's just on the introduction on the inside cover. Is music removed from politics? To what end, beneficent or malevolent, can music and musicians be put? In short, when human rights are grossly abused and politics turn to fascist demagoguery, can art and artists be innocent? Of course, he thinks they can't be. That's his answer to that. It's just, I mean, the assumption really is that everyone's guilty. And here's the end of the introduction of this. It says, it's just very blatant. It says, he thinks he's being very fair to everybody. He says, hence the men and women who leap from the pages of this book are rarely either saints or sinners, black or white, as ordinary Germans under stress who often wished to avoid oppressive political obligations. They tried to circumvent them as best they could. Others played the new game more deftly and ended up on top. One and all, musicians and singers, composers and conductors, all of whom had to make a living as artists in the Third Reich, emerged in May 1945 severely tainted, with their professional ethos violated and their music often compromised. Gray people against a landscape of gray.
Yeah, well, I read so much of that junk.
I know,
and you're
very
right.
Hard to read these books.
They try to pretend that they're being fair, and they try to pretend like they're not being biased. They're not trying to denounce the Nazis just for because they're Nazis. But that's exactly what they do. The way they write all
yeah.
that.
And well,
it's all over
because it's all predicated on the Holocaust. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of the climate there, when the Jews, you were saying how the Jews were relegated to their own cultural institutions and orchestras and so on. Well, the quality of music in Germany did not suffer from that, did it?
That's
in
right.
Fact,
they
it
were very disappointed to find out. The fact is, Hitler put more money into music and the arts than anyone had since the Medicis or some of those really munificent middle age popes. He lavished money into it, and that means more people had jobs, and they had a higher quality to work towards, which an artist loves, of course. You know, I was thinking, instead of going in the order I'd first thought of, since we're talking about what happened in the occupation, we might play next a song sung by Gerhard Hüsch, because there's an article talking about his denazification hearing, and the fact that somebody was sitting in on it and wrote about it, and this person thought, oh, he seems very innocent, and then the man who was interrogating him, who of course was part of the information control division, said, oh, no, no, he's just being very sly and trying to pretend, you know, because actually he performed at this official function, and his mistress was the sister of Balder von Schirach, and various things. But, you know, it didn't have to be as blatant as that, because what this article admits, but it doesn't consider it admitting it, it just thinks that's reasonable, because it's talking about the goal of America, and that it, at the Potsdam conference, they agreed that they were going to revolutionize the character of the Germans. You know, mm-hmm. that's their right to try to change the whole. Mm-hmm. They agreed at Potsdam that says to transform German society,
mm-hmm.
because of course they're warmongering, et cetera, et cetera. They have to do that, but I mean, just what chutzpah, right? You get to come in and just change, and yet somehow you think it's much worse for the previous regime to have got, you know, let some people go with compensation.
Mm-hmm.
Here you can just ride roughshod. And
well, you want to play this which is a Brahms piece, and then go back to Strauss again?
Yes, let's read it. Because what it has said was that after this man decided this, he was put on the blacklist, and his concert career was over. He did
well.
Teach
he's
after
wonderful.
That.
He's an absolutely wonderful singer. And so he was a good National Socialist or a good patriot, and they destroyed his singing career after 1945.
Yeah, he had a teaching career after that, a very good one. He ended up teaching in Bloomington, Indiana, which is a great school for voice. But one of the things
he left Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Later, one of the things they held against him was that when he was in Holland, there was an article saying that he had protected Jews and was that he said he'd protected Jews or that he didn't mind Jews and that he tried not to perform at official functions. And that he had denied that. So they said, look, you denied it at the time. Well, he's under the Hitler regime. Is he going to say, yeah, I said I like Jews and I don't want to perform at official functions? And so, but they used that as a reason to blacklist him. Anyway, so, yeah, let's hear this. This is Wie bist du meine Königin? And it's a beautiful Brahms song.
What does that translate then?
I'm just looking for where I have that translation.
Well, you don't know it? Come on, you know it.
No, this is one that I don't know. Well, you know, it's more a man's song.
Okay.
Because he's talking, how are you, my queen? And I did have it here. Oh, here it is. Wie bist du meine Königin? He's basically saying she's wonderful. You just smile and spring breezes blow. through my mood, wonderful. And then he says, fresh blooming roses shine. They're like you. Everything all over blooms. You're blooming.
Well, this is
wonderful.
A typical German-type love song,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you'd call it that, Lieder song, and there's so many like that. And they might
yeah,
sing
flowers, all this nature, because it's a German one, yeah.
Yeah, right.
And it all, every verse ends with wonderful, wonderful. The last verse says, let me collapse in your arms. It's just like death, but it's a wonderful death. Death is wonderful.
So. It might seem a little bit overdone, but this was
a romantic period.
And they came from a lot of these songs came from actual poetry. They weren't written for the song. They were actually some German poetry that was put to music.
Yes, it was by Georg Friedrich Daumer, who lived from 1800 to 1875, the middle of the Romantic Age.
Okay, right. And this wonderful singer is performing it. Wasn't that nice? It was so dignified for a, it wasn't a goofy love
yes.
song.
Yes,
and then
yes.
you have Brahms.
Dignified but
Brahms,
passionate.
Yeah, passionate is right. You know, profound, and this is so typically German, this kind of music, this kind of song, too. And Brahms is always recognizable. too.
Yes,
and,
I think so.
He put a lot of that kind of he put a lot of those kind of words to music.
Mm-hmm.
So
he did a lot
yeah.
of folk songs too, and we will. Folk songs always are very important in the whole German as a basis for their music. Brahms said a lot of folk songs himself.
Mm-hmm.
As such, yeah, he has a beautiful floating lines and wonderful.
Well, let's we have a lot to cover, so let's go back to Strauss and get him over with.
Let's how about this?
Well,
I haven't even listened
to him. I'd like to hear him.
Okay.
I listened to a lot of it, but I didn't listen to these. Why do we want to skip them?
Okay, you see Björling.
What is that?
He's singing. Let's hear the Patzak first, which is he's singing Ständchen, because that's a little bit more different. The Morgan is kind of a slow, wonderful one, but Ständchen is very sprightly in a way. And let me read you what this translation is. I've sung this because it's good for a light voice. And Julius Patzak was a tenor, and he didn't have a huge voice, and his voice was just really perfect for this. Sometimes when sopranos sing this, you don't hear the words so well, and it's really good to be able to have a light feel to it. But since it's a man's voice, it's more in the speaking range, and you hear the voice. I mean, you hear the words.
Here's what it says.
It's a Ständchen, which is a serenade. And I think it says, mach auf, doch leise, mein Kind. It says, open up, but very quietly, keinen von Schlummer zu wecken, so you don't wake anyone. Kaum murmelt der Bach, kaum zittert im Wind ein Blatt an den Büschen und Hecken. More nature. The stream is just barely murmuring, hardly a leaf shivers on a bush or hedge. So gently, my Mädchen, so nobody wakes. Nur leise die Hand auf die Klinke gelegt. Just put your hand very gently on the doorknob. Mit Tritten wie Tritte der Elfen so sacht, with little footsteps like elf footsteps, über die Blumen zu hüpfen, to hop over the flowers. fly lightly into the moonshine night to slip out to me in the garden. All around the blooms are sleeping by the murmuring brook, and duften, that's a German word we don't have, sending out beautiful fragrance in their sleep. Only love is awake. And then it you'll hear the music kind of darken a little bit, and he says, sit down here. Here it darkens geheimnisvoll, like secrets, under the linden trees. The nightingales above us will dream of our kisses, and the rose, when she wakes in the morning, will glow with the rapture of the night. Die Rose, wenn sie am Morgen erwacht, hochglühen von den Wonneschauen der Nacht. You'll hear that he sets it so well, Strauss. You'll hear all that passion, especially at the end.
Okay, very good. And this is 2:23, so it probably takes longer to tell about it than to listen to it.
Yeah, it goes so very fast.
We need to know. Yeah, we need to know what it means. So here we go. Thank you. Margaret, I was going to ask you about the previous singer, Hush. Was he not a tenor, was he?
No, he was a baritone.
Yeah, but he still could hit those high notes.
Yes,
once in a while. But now
thing
this singer, he does the great. He really does the high notes so well.
Yeah,
and I love this in German music that you hear these especially in these kind of this type of song. You hear these men hitting these high notes that just sound so tender and sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. We'll hear that with Hermann Prey later. He's singing a popular song, but you'll hear he's a baritone, but he's got these sweet high notes.
Yes,
just
right.
So smooth.
That's right. I recall that. I like that one very much. Well, okay, so now we've got the last Strauss song, Strauss, it's not a Strauss song maybe, but by Strauss is conducting.
Oh, yeah, we have two more.
Bierling?
We have the Bierling, and then we have this Schlussnuss, which is kind of nice because it's Zweigen.
Oh, yeah.
A great song by Strauss. Maybe we should just go ahead and hear both of them, I don't know, and do some of the other things later.
Why not?
I'm not sure. Okay.
Yeah, because so. It shows the range of what one person was involved in. And this Bjorling, it's 3 minutes and 26 seconds. And we don't have to play the whole thing.
It's a wonderful piece, but it's very slow. You'll hear it. It's a very slow, tranquil piece, and it's about people. It's a couple, you can tell. Perhaps they've had a falling out, and they're going to reconcile, but they're talking about here. I'm just getting it right now. Morgen, that means tomorrow, and tomorrow the sun will shine again, and on the path that I'll follow, it shall unite us, the happy ones, upon this sun-breathing earth, and to the wide shore with its blue waves, we will quietly and slowly descend. Speechless, we shall look into each other's eyes, and upon us will descend the muted silence of happiness.
Okay, well, maybe when we get to a kind of a breaking point, I might
end feel
it.
Free to end it, because it's a fairly slow one, and then we can
it
hear
might
the
Weidnung,
which is very spirited.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. We'll do this one first.
Thank you.
I think we got a good taste of that, and I liked it very much.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be in a very relaxed mood, not in
a hurry.
Right,
that's right. So this next one will be, and again, a baritone voice, and it's almost a little gritty baritone, but very nice, I think. He's kind of, he's not as rosy-cheeked as Bierling. And this is a very famous song of Strauss's, Zueignung. And it's got kind of a 19th century theme to it, about that his beloved has given him freedom, and he tastes all the men were allowed to do. He tastes the cup of sin and then returns to her and thanks her. So here I'll read you with the translation. He says, "Da, ja, du weißt es, teure Seele. Ah, you know it, dear soul, that far from you I languish. Love causes the heart to ache. Be thanked. Once I drank to my freedom from the amethyst beaker, and you blessed the cup. Be thanked. You exorcised the evil spirits in it, so that I, as never before, cleansed and freed and holy, sank upon your breast. To you my thanks. Habe Dank."
Was this kind of like, would this be popular during the war because of the soldiers away from home?
Oh, and, I don't know. Of course, no. It was written a long time before that. I'm not sure when the poetry was written. As I said, it's sort of a 19th century feeling, but it's true. You could really apply it to the war.
I think it would be good if whenever you have the dates of when this was mm-hmm. performed or whatever that you
yeah.
Know,
well, this was performed during the war. This was right. Performed. I did have the date to it, but in fact, it may be written here. Anyway, but it was 1944, I believe.
Okay.
As I recall.
Yeah, because I know most of the things were, have a date from the 30s and in the early 40s, but I don't have that in front of me, so I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know
that this one, as I recall, this was 1944. It was sung in Austria, I think, but I didn't. I ended up not having things in front of me because I got so tangled up with some technical things.
Right. Well, okay, this is 3 minutes and 50 seconds, almost 4 minutes. So you think, is it worth playing the whole thing? Because I don't...
Well, just see what
I would rather, if we can, unless it gets too repetitive.
Why don't you can't go forward in it. We don't have to...
No.
Why don't you just play as much as you want? It's got a big climax, but you can just imagine that.
Well, I think I'm going to... If it's really good and lively, I'm going to play the whole thing, so... Let's go with it.
Ja, du weißt
okay.
es, teure Seele von Richard Strauss. Und wer in die Fremde will wandern von Hugo Wolf. Mit Heinrich
yeah, there's a second song, but of course
unfreiwilliger Abgesang auf eine Welt, von der nur die Trümmer übrig blieben.
Ja, du weißt es, teure Seele, das ist fern. Leben macht die Herzen krank. Habe Dank.
that's the end of it.
Oh.
It was much sharper, much shorter than you thought because there is a second piece after it.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, fine.
So that was great.
All
it
right.
wasn't long at all. I thought it seemed strange it would last so long, but then I remembered yeah. it had a second piece. Doesn't that
okay, I thought you meant you when you heard you first say that that you had already removed that, but okay, that maybe the announcer was announcing that. Okay, so that was well, I like the theme of that. I like what you told us about the words and so on, and that
I like to
the singer is yeah, I also yes, and well, they're all good, but it's Heinrich Schlussmann. How do you pronounce it?
Schlussnuss.
Yeah, Schlussmann.
No, I don't think there's a man on the end. I think it's just Schlussnuss.
Oh, I somehow added the man on the end. Okay.
I haven't seen anything about how he was blacklisted, but I assume he was. Almost everybody was for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger they were, the more they felt they had to punish them. Because they wanted it to be an example. So we'll talk about in the next part where we play popular music how some people who did popular music were just kept on composing movie music forever without a break.
Okay. You know, before we do our intermission music, why don't we do the Jew music now? Fit that in right here.
This is how they deprived themselves of this wonderful music and...
Yeah.
That's right. We must.
Yeah, this first one is Arnold Schoenberg, piano concerto. And I just want people to really listen to this. I know it's going to be painful. It's actually very long, but I won't play it all. I'll just play some of it to give you a good idea of what the Nazis didn't like and what they prevented their people from listening to, at least in the main theaters and so on. I think this is the orchestra warm-up.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is.
Yeah,
it's hard to tell.
It is hard to tell. This is kind of a good contrast. Then there'll be a pause before they start. I didn't have anything so long up here before, I guess. Well, all right, so or I just didn't pay attention. I learn a little something all the time, which always helps. So, well, we've got another Jewish one, Hindemith.
Yeah, he wasn't Jewish, but he was kind of communistically inclined. And the fact is, he did write some things that were better than this. I mean, I don't know how much better. I mean, there was a big furor over opera that Furtwängler was going to produce of his, or conduct, as artistic director have produced. But the he was a communist, basically, and this is a very communistic piece. And so what happened was there was a big strife over it, because the people who were devoted National Socialists, especially young feisty ones, didn't want it to be staged, and the communists, who were still plenty of communists there, as you know, did want it to be staged, and they were hoping to kind of make a comeback. And so it turned out there was going to be a lot of uproar Goebbels ended up saying it couldn't be performed. And so then the Jews, of course, grabbed onto that and said, censorship, censorship. Even though they allowed a concert version to be put on, but nobody talks about that. But so this is an example of some other music of his. Anyway, let's play it. But
yeah, it's only 1 minute and 38 seconds, so I'll just play
it.
You know, it's
okay. Oh, that's
it. Has no melody or anything. That's the thing about this music.
Yeah, it's very.
Why,
you know,
it's so
these.
You go ahead.
These things are all built. I mean, I did study music history. We're forced to study this stuff. It's all based on very intellectual exercises, and it has nothing to do with either natural. You know, there is a natural order of music, based on the natural tones of when you divide a string in two or four, it makes different frequencies and they're harmonious to the ear. But these are just totally made up systems that have nothing to do with what is in nature or what is agreeable to our ears, which is why we don't like it.
You know, I think that's very interesting, because in art school, where I studied too, and we were infiltrated at that time with all this Jewish art, and that's what a lot of the pure abstract art came from. People doing what I called hard edge stuff or formalism and so on. And
I knew
some of these students who were doing that, and it's just like exercises too. They just
do little
studies, and then they make it big on a big canvas, and everybody says, "Oh, wow, look at that!"
Well,
you know, and
lucky
it had nothing. Go ahead.
Because that's art too, you know.
I missed something you said there.
I just said you could piss in a bottle over these days, right? It's art.
This is where this is where it kind of got started. Where this new music and new painting got started with things like this. And it, saying it was just exercises is really hits the nail on the head for it, because that's exactly what it was.
It's intellectual systems, which have nothing to do with what people will respond to. Because, you know, something else, which is a little bit off topic but not totally, is that, really not, because I think with the rise of the nonprofit corporations that fund art, people can get all this money to do stuff that everybody else hates, except the people who give them the money, who are usually...
And all the new art came in. I mean, there came a time when if you were Mexican or black or something like that, you could get money from these foundations. For nothing, for just junk, you know. And it was just really, that's what destroyed it all for me. So, but another time.
Yeah, we'll talk about it another time. We could talk about art. You know who would be good?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm just saying that Papa Heraclius, you know him?
I know him.
I'm just saying he went to art school here.
Oh, yeah, I know. Okay.
He got
there's a lot of people who went to art school. Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, yes, it was the same thing,
Yeah, same time, same process, right.
Yes.
Okay, well, it's time for our mid we're going to call it intermission today because we're going to play Fort Wongler's conducting Beethoven's Ode to Joy. Right, Margaret?
Yes, and this was a very special performance.
Yes, tell us about that before we listen to it. And it's going to be 11 minutes, ladies and gentlemen. So you can certainly take some time off, but I hope that you will stay around and listen to this because this is an important part of our musical program today.
Yes, well, this was, of course, a black mark for Furtwängler after the war because this was played on the eve of Hitler's birthday with Hitler in attendance. So it's a very special performance, and I think you'll hear the excitement in it. And I don't think it sounds as if he was reluctant to do it. It's a wonderful, wonderful rendition.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that's why at the end, after the applause, someone is speaking, and I believe that's what he's saying, you know, giving birthday wishes or something like that to the Fuhrer. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? So I don't know if I should.
Yeah, I think I cut it off before the end of the applause.
Well, no, it's still there. It's still there, but
I stopped listening after that.
I see. Yeah,
I didn't hear that part.
I probably won't add it because it's all in German. But just so people know that Hitler was in attendance here, and it starts out a little bit ahead of the Ode to Joy part with a kind of a lively part, and then quiets down, and then we hear the Ode to Joy. So let's go right ahead with it.
Thank you.
All right.
Are yeah, you there, Margaret? Pretty inspiring, huh?
Boy, yeah, I'm glad we played the whole thing. I hadn't listened to it all together right before the show. I just listened to the beginning and the end, kind of. But, yeah, it's a several parts. And, you know, what I say about this is that Fort Wengler was the greatest conductor of the Third Reich period and one of the greatest German conductors of the modern age, if not the greatest. And he was playing Beethoven's composition, who was the greatest German composer and maybe the greatest composer ever, and the playing one of his greatest works, Ode to Joy. So that was really supreme achievement.
Yeah, and for the greatest ruler Germany ever had, or probably anybody, and on his birthday.
On his birthday, yes. Yeah. Really special. Thanks for bringing that to us.
You're welcome. I guess we could talk a little bit about Fort Wengler. And then I was thinking that we might just go to the popular pieces, because I think maybe we could get them all in if we...
Oh, I think we'll get them all in. And, you know, we can go over the 2 hours if we have to.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I don't think the recording time is as good a quality as the... as the schedule time is what I've come to think, but it's okay for just a little bit of stuff, and particularly to finish talking about some things that we want to talk about. So, but yeah, I don't want to. We have a Handel piece by von Karajan. How important is it to play that one? I mean, he was very important.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece, and he's a great, and he of course was banned for a while after. They really, you know, there's a list in here of all the composers they banned. I'm sure that all the conductors that they banned, I'm sure that the Germans did not ban that many Jewish composers, conductors, if there were so. Here's the conductors they banned: Wilhelm Fritz Wengler, Joseph Keilbert, Rudolf Kempe, Clemens Krauss, Karl Böhm, Oswald Kabasta, Herbert von Karajan, Eugen Joachim Karl Elmendorf, and Hans Knappertsbusch, all barred from the podium.
Wow. Okay, well, do you want to play this, von Karajan? Maybe this would be a good time to do it, since he's another great conductor.
Mm-hmm. And as I recall, it's pretty short. It's very clean. It's beautiful.
Let me find it. It's right here. But I kind of quit looking. What do I have it under? I have it under. I thought I had it under Handel, but I don't see it. So, here it is. I've got it. It's 3 minutes and 26 seconds. Should I cut it short, maybe?
Just as you feel, as you're doing
okay.
It, you can.
All right. Thank you. okay. I thought that was nice, but a little heavy and slow for our program.
Yeah, it's
so,
very clean, though. That's what I noticed with his conducting. It's so clean.
Oh.
You think?
Well, that's very German to be clean.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Well, maybe I thought just the music was that way because it's Handel, you know. From
yeah,
the,
I know. German too.
Yeah. Well, you know, yes, I think we can go to the lighter stuff now. And, you know, what we don't – two things I have under opera, and I don't know if they belong there, but the one I don't want to miss is Erna Berger, the soprano.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Yes,
yeah, is
yes,
that opera or operetta?
It is opera. This is serious opera, and then we can go to the Rudolf Schock singing opera by Norbert Schulze.
Okay
so this is Erna Berger in 1935 singing Caro Nome from Verdi's Rigoletto. And you'll just listen and
you'll understand. She was an extremely popular singer, and you can understand when you listen to her. This is
she's just saying she met the Duke, and he said he was a poor student, which is just what appealed to her heart, and she's about to be abducted and raped by him. But
to stop there.
German.
What?
Yeah, it's got some little glitches in it. I wonder if it's because she's singing so high.
I I'm hearing all kinds of them, and I just hope that the finished program isn't this bad. Or I thought it's maybe just me hearing them, because I hear a lot of things when I'm doing a show in my headphones here and so on that I don't hear during the podcast. So I hope it's not that bad. But, yeah, that one was had a whole lot. And you're hearing it too, so.
Yeah, I heard it in this a lot. More than
I did too. Well,
so that's
all right.
What I think, yeah.
Well, let's go on to Rudolf Schock, because this is my favorite of all.
Yeah.
And this is operetta. He's
it's called an opera, but it's sort of a light as operas go. And it's an interesting opera because it's for adults and children specifically. I think both for watching and for participating. You'll hear a children's chorus in this. And course, we talked about in our last program about Lili Marleen, because he's the one who set the music to that incredible hit.
Oh, is he? I didn't remember.
Yeah, that's the same
his name
one.
At all.
And I knew at the time that he supposedly wrote operas or operettas or something, but I didn't really know what. And so this is something he wrote. It's from the opera Der Schwarze Peter, which you'd think that might be about a black man, but it's really about a game called Schwarzer Peter.
Black Peter.
Yes.
Okay. And the title of it is so nice. What is the title in German?
Can you tell me? I've forgotten. I didn't
write it down. Ich hab in meine. That's the only part I have.
Oh,
ich hab in meine.
Oh, dear. I can find it. but meanwhile, I'll tell you about Norbert Schulze a little bit more. He did lots of films, and he's one of the ones who did not suffer after the war at all. He paid them 3,000 marks and just went on composing, and that's particularly interesting given the fact that he wrote lots of music, martial music, music marches and stuff, and propaganda type of music for the war effort, including Bombs Over England. So, but they don't care. He's not Furtwängler. They need him to do movies. He paid 3,000 marks. But another very interesting thing about him is that he composed the music for a wonderful film, which you can find on YouTube, which came about at the right at the end of the war. This name of this is Ach, ich hab in meinem Herzen da drinnen. That means I have inside my heart.
Okay.
So this movie, Kohlberg, was written towards the end of the war, and they spent lots of money on it and took troops out to act in it. And because it was about this town that was the last holdout against Napoleon, and finally the French withdrew and they never invaded this town. And he wrote the music for that, and very, very well done. But
now, Norbert Schulze did.
Yes, Norbert Schulze.
And the singer here is Rudolf Schock, right?
Yes, and he didn't have much of a career during the war. He was old enough to, but his career had just started when the war came, and he hadn't made enough name for himself, so he just was a regular soldier. And then after the war, his career really blossomed. So this was actually done after the war, this recording.
I'm sorry you told me that.
Okay,
well, it's only 2 minutes and 47 seconds, so we're going to listen to all of it. It's quite nice. And then it has these footsteps at the end. And if you watch the video of it or the movie part or whatever it is, you understand what those are. But anyway.
Good.
So this wonderful singer was a soldier during the war.
Yes,
and
he
thankfully survived to continue on and have a singing career.
Yes, he had a big singing career and film career. You can find lots of movies with him on YouTube.
Uh-huh. Anybody well, that particular song is just so tender, and he just manages to sing it so tenderly. Well, now, okay, we've got...
I just wanted to say just a couple of little things about this, about the tradition of choral music in Germany. I mean, this has a couple of themes that are important. You find choruses made up of Germans all over the world. It's always been that way. In Pittsburgh, there's a Männer Chor, Teutonic Männer Chor. When I was doing research on Wyoming in the 1890s, the soldiers stationed at Fort Laramie had a German choir, the German members of the army there. And so here you've got this choral music, and you hear heard and saying, Heimat, Heimat, Heimat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right,
well,
I picked up that word.
Today.
Well, that's good. That's nice. Well, we go to what I've got under operetta, popular, and theatrical. A little bit of everything, and we've got some swing. So where do you want to start there?
That's what I want to do next, the one that's labeled swing. It's musique, musique, musique. I don't know if you've ever heard of Marika Ruck. She was a Hungarian.
Yeah.
Actress, she mostly a dancer, but she had a big career in films, very pretty and amazing dancer. And this is a big production number with her. And actually, in this film, which is Hallo Janine, you see this being written, the composer is composing it before your eyes and ears. And it's got a lot of innocence to it, but you hear that it's got a real swing, big band character. It's a musique, it's a. I don't need any $1 million. I don't need lots of gold. All I need is
music,
music, music. And then he says, doch, that very German word. There's one, eine Kleinigkeit, one little thing I need besides, and that's you. So then the next one is,
is this Otto Stenzel, the singer?
What?
Is Otto Stenzel the singer?
No, he's the writer. No, he's the band leader. He's the band leader.
Oh, he's the band leader. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a whole bunch of people who are singing it, including Marika Ruck, though she didn't have a very big voice. She's a big dancer.
All right, well, I've seen her a lot, and I'm sure a lot of other Third Reich fans have also. And as you said, she was Hungarian. I don't know when she came to. Maybe she was born in Germany, for all I know. But
I think she was. She had a Hungarian accent anyway. One thing about her that I'll mention is that I don't know if you've noticed, if you look at YouTube's Marika Ruck, she sure went downhill after the war, not in terms of her abilities, but the things she was in. Oh, my God, doing these jungle beat things with black people and, with her hair bleached blonde and in a space suit. And just, it's really sad, just sort of getting by.
Let's not think about it that way. Let's think about it.
No, let's go back to...
Standards are being upheld. And this one is just under 3 minutes, so let's listen.
Weiter nicht als nur Musik, Musik, Musik.
Doch eine ganze Kleinigkeit, die brauch ich noch dazu. Und diese große Kleinigkeit bist du, nur du, nur du, 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 du. Ich brauche keine Millionen, mir fehlt kein Pfennig zum Glück. Ich brauch nur deine Liebe und Musik, Musik, Musik.
That's real swing music with all that syncopation.
Yeah,
you were
right,
they did, it's
the they did great.
It.
They did great swing music in Germany. Fantastic.
Yeah, they did.
There was all kinds of it.
Yeah, I have a book by this guy, Michael H. Cater, who wrote a lot of books about composers of the Nazi era, et cetera. And he wrote one on different drummers about jazz and the culture of Germany. He's talking about how they weren't so great at it, you know, and they, et cetera. But you know what? First of all, jazz is not my very favorite, but it's not their heritage, you know.
Right, but they did a good job with it, I always thought.
That's right. What they did very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting also to see who were a lot of the people who really did the jazz were these rich kids, these spoiled rich kids, it seemed like. Who just, you know, they like to rebel, and I don't know. He talked in kind of a patronizing way about the lower class people who tried to imitate them. So I wasn't very impressed. And then he's like, and then the Gestapo came after him. Well, they were doing other things besides just playing jazz, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, I want to mention for Marcus, who sent an email reminding me of Charlie and his orchestra. And I've I think I've played some break music with Charlie and his orchestra before, but they were very big at that time. It's labeled Nazi swing, but so I'll just mention that. And I would like to go to Herman Pray next because I really enjoyed his song, and then we could do Hans Albers. Well, how would that be? Because it was two of them.
Sure, that'd be great.
Top
yeah.
Okay.
Let me say a little bit about this song that Herman Pry sings. Of course, he's not from the era. He's a little after it. He was a kid at the time of the war. But this was from a music movie from 1939, and it's based on the Guy de Maupassant novel, which has been made into a movie recently with Robert Pattinson of Twilight fame. It's the story of a man who all the ladies love, and he gets along in life that way, and that's what his diction is very good, so if you understand any German, you'll probably understand a lot of it. He says he's not handsome, but very charming. He's not very smart, but very gallant. You know, he kisses all the ladies, but he's never true to any of them, but any woman who loves him, he has never had such a good time, or something like that. It's a very But he sings it so smoothly.
Well, that's what I liked about him is you could really understand exactly what he was saying. You could, if you want to learn German, you could even learn it from him in this song anyway. So it's fun. Let's see. 3 minutes.
Ein kleines Liedchen geht von Mund zu Mund. Es ist beliebt und das hat einen Grund. Denn es besingt den Liebling vieler Damen, die ihm zuliebe fielen aus dem Rahmen. Gott Amor selber hat es komponiert, hat es den schönen Frauen dediziert. Und weil es bezaubernd klingt und süß, singt man ihn ganz Paris. Du hast Glück bei den Frauen, Bellamy. So viel Glück bei den Frauen, Bellamy. Bist nicht schön, doch charmant. Bist nicht klug, doch sehr galant. Bist keine Held, nur ein Mann, der gefällt. Du verliebst jeden Tag dich aufs Neue. Alle küsst du und bleibst keiner treu. Doch die Frau, die dich liebt, machst du glücklich wie noch nie. Bellamy, Bellamy, Bellamy. Ich kenne einen netten jungen Mann, der gar nichts ist und nichts Besonderes kann, und den die Damen dennoch heiß verehren, weil er das hat, was alle Frauen begehren. Er macht die anderen Männer ganz nervös mit seiner tollen Chronik skandalös. Er nimmt die Frauen, wie er will, bei ihm hält jede still. Bist nicht schön, doch charmant. Bist nicht klug, doch sehr galant. Bist kein Held, nur ein Mann, der gefällt. Du verliebst jeden Tag dich aufs Neue. Alle küsst du und bleibst keiner treu. Doch die Frau, die dich liebt, machst du glücklich wie noch nie. Bellamy, Bellamy, Bellamy.
There we go.
Smile, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's nice to listen to music like that. It makes you feel good. So now we're going to go, though, to Hans Albers. He's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And you tell me which one you want me to play first.
I think the first one, they're in order of the time they were sung. And the first one is, as I said before, it's a little bit of a scurrilous song. It was sung right at the end of the war, well, sort of towards its in 1944 it was recorded. It was his last recording with Odeon before the end of the war, January 1944. And it's, my thing just ran out of memory, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to read this text. I had it. Oh, here it is. No, I do have it. Okay, yeah, this is Beim ersten Mal, das tut's noch weh. And it's about a woman's experience of falling in love with a sailor. And it's like at first it hurts, but later you get used to it. And he uses the word peu à peu, the French expression, little by little. He says her first one was a matrose, a sailor, who was tattooed on his chest. He wore sea blue pants, and she was so embarrassed. He took her hand and told her he'd be true and gave his word, but then the next morning he had to go back on board, and then he sings the chorus, and then he says, so he said he was going to be true, and And if it's a man, if it's a boy, name it Johannes. If it's a girl, name it Marie. But he wasn't there for the wedding, and he wasn't there for the christening. And when the and she found another man, and the Johannes called him Papa.
okay, that
anyway,
kind
so
of
that's
thing.
Yeah, so that's the story, and you'll hear him in there in the middle saying, "Gib mal die Trompete her," and play the trumpet. So it's got a lot of jazzy stuff in it. Yeah.
30 das war ein Matrose, der war auf der Brust tätowiert. Der trug eine meerblaue Hose und sie hat sich so schrecklich geniert. Er nahm ihre Hand und versprach ihr die Treue und gab ihr sein Wort. Er nehm keine anderen nach ihr. Und am Morgen, da musste er an Bord. Tja, beim ersten Mal, da tut's noch weh. Da glaubt man noch, dass man es nie verwinden kann. Doch mit der Zeit so peu à peu gewöhnt man sich daran.
Gib mal die Trompete her.
Treu sein, so sprach er, ich kann es versuchen, ich war's zwar noch nie. Wird's ein Knabe, so nenn ihn Johannes, wird's ein Mädchen, so nenn es Marie. Er ist nicht zur Hochzeit gekommen, er war auch zur Taufe nicht da. Sie hat einen anderen genommen und zudem sagt Johannes, Papa, verletzt. Tja, beim ersten Mal tut's noch weh. Da glaubt man noch, dass man es nie verbinden kann. Doch mit der Zeit so peu à peu gewinnt man sich daran.
And the next one is a lid. What do you
I
want to say
want
about
to say, doesn't he pack an incredible amount of meaning into every single note and word?
Yeah, and he's another one. I like to listen to the way he pronounces the words. You know, I really enjoy, you really hear the German spoken the way it is. And you know, when you hear these songs, you have to wonder about people who still want to think that German is some kind of an ugly language when it's really such a wonderful language.
Yeah, it's so rich.
Yeah, it has everything. Okay.
The next piece is 2 years later, 3 years later. It's in 1947, and he's had a lot to, you know, a lot has gone on then, and this is called the Song of the Refugees. Of course, he's talking about the German refugees. And here are the words of this. We trail along, we're pulled along endless roads through day and night, abandoned by God and men, entirely without a goal, without sense. We wander on endless roads, driven, pursued by fate, comfortless, towards the comfortless future. When will we find ourselves again? Only a roof over our heads and the daily bread and work for our hands. Then we'll be glad to fight against bad luck and sorrow and change our fate. the world will be beautiful again in freedom and peace. We've lost everything, but we'll overcome the pain. We've given up. We've despaired, but we won't go under. We won't let our hope sink. We believe, in spite of tears and sorrow, that a better day will come in a new time.
Okay. 2 minutes, 39 seconds.
Lied der Flüchtlinge. Wir ziehen auf endlosen Straßen durch Tage und Nächte dahin. Von Gott und den Menschen verlassen, ganz ohne Ziel, ohne Sinn. Wir wandern auf endlosen Wegen, getrieben, verfolgt vom Geschick, der trostlosen Zukunft entgegen. Wann finden wir zurück? Nur ein Dach überm Kopf und das tägliche Brot und Arbeit für unsere Hände. Dann kämpfen wir gern gegen Unglück und Not und zwingen das Schicksal zur Wende. Die Welt soll wieder schön in Freiheit und Frieden erstehen. Wir haben zwar alles verloren, doch wollen wir den Schmerz überstehen. Wir haben verzweifelt geschworen, wir wollen nicht untergehen. Wir lassen die Hoffnung nicht sinken, wir glauben trotz Tränen und Leid, dass uns bessere Tage winken in einer neuen Zeit. Aber ein Dach überm Kopf und das tägliche Brot und Arbeit für unsere Hände. Dann kämpfen wir gern gegen Unglück und Not und zwingen das Schicksal zur Wende. Die Welt soll wieder schön in Freiheit und Frieden erstehen. Die Welt soll wieder schön in Freiheit und Frieden erstehen.
Okay, I'm gonna kind of take charge here, Margaret, and we've only got a few minutes left for the live audience to hear the show, and I want to play this. That was wonderful, by the way. That was really wonderful.
Yes,
and we can talk about it more after we play Heinrich Spitta and Wir Jungen, which is a Hitler Jugend song, and he sings it a cappella, and I think it's just so good, and I don't want the live listening audience to miss to have to wait for it. So I'm going to play that right away, okay? And then we'll continue discussing all this. All right.
Erde schafft das Neue, Erde nimmt das Alte, deutsche heilige Erde, uns allein erhalte. Sie hat uns geboren, ihr gehören wir. Treue, ewige Treue, kündet das an ihr. Wir Jungen schreiten gläubig der Sonne zugewandt. Wir sind ein heiliger Frühling ins deutsche Land. Glaube schafft das Neue, Glaube tilgt das Alte, deutscher heilger Glaube nie in uns erkalte. Neu ist geboren aus der Dunkelheit. Wimpelwehend hünden, Deutschland ist befreit. Wir Jungen schreiten gläubig der Sonne zugewandt. Wir sind ein heiliger Frühling ins deutsche Land.
All right. So that's it for the music. And what do you want to tell us about that last song?
Well, I'd like to be able to tell you more. I only have sort of a foggy notion because, anyway, but Heinrich Spitta was born, I think 1908. He missed World War One. No, maybe it was a little earlier, but he just missed World War One and sort of regretted it. And he wrote a lot for youth and really believed in inspiring the youth. And maybe I can tell you more some other time about him, because I think he's worth talking more about. He was one of the younger composers in this time.
Mm-hmm. And this was this a Hitler? You told me, I think it was a Hitler.
Yeah, it was a Hitler youth song, and he wrote a lot for the Hitler youth.
We keep going, Margaret, because we'll still be on the recording.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, well, about... I have some more about him, but I'm not sure where it is, so...
Okay. Well, I thought... I really liked that. I thought it was so... I just like to know the words. You don't have the translation.
Yeah, I don't have the... I was trying to find the words. I don't have them here. I was looking them up. I cannot find them. But you hear there's a part where it's saying... talking about Germany, she bore us, we belong to her, and we'll be true to her. I remember about him that he was very influenced by folk songs, as a lot of people were, and was really in the 20s into the folk song music, and then he was devoting himself a lot to the youth movement and to writing songs for them, and he wrote quite a few of them, in fact.
Well, that's what was going on in the 20s, was the folk movement. And
here, works for... For Heinrich Spitta, I wish that it would have some of the translations, but I mean, there are quite a lot of them.
Mm. Well, we'll have to talk about him sometime. I'll have to look into
Junge
him myself.
The Volkschaft.
But this probably will turn out to be the one I like best of all. Well, I don't know.
It's very beautiful.
Well, we can go back to Hans Albers a little bit, or anything that we.
We could play that Zara Leander since we have it.
We have Zara Leander. You know, I skipped that for now because,
because you wanted to
she's
get to
so
the
well known. Yeah, the others
that's
I
right.
think are more interesting.
Yeah, but
for,
this is a very nice one. You hear with her also that beautiful diction. You really hear what she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly what she's saying, but it's about longing. Sehnsucht.
Right. She was so popular. But a little bit about this Hans Albers. What was he known for?
Well, he was a very, very popular film actor. He was started before.
Right.
And I think he also worked in cabaret, but as you could hear, that was a very cabaret-type style. He was in films before Hitler's time, and I'm trying to remember I saw this one. Oh, I've forgotten the name of it, but it was so decadent, you know. But he's good at being decadent. But often he plays those kind of sailor roles, too.
Yeah, I was looking for a picture of him for the Blog Talk screen thing, you know, where they use pictures. He looked like a sailor in half of them. And the one I picked, he's got an accordion. He's like playing this little accordion, but I don't think he actually did. It's probably in a movie. Playing that role.
Yeah, that's
or something
sort of his
like
character.
That.
But
yeah.
in the movie I can't remember the name of from 1930 or so, he plays this clown, a very decadent clown. But he does a very good job because he's in love with this woman and she's in love with him as a clown. But when he's out of costume and she meets him, she doesn't know he's a clown. She doesn't give him the time of day. So that's as far as I got in the movie.
So that's the sad makes him a real sad clown then.
Yeah.
Right. Well, okay, we can end with Zara. I know it's a beautiful song, so let me get down to it. And anything more you want to say about her? Or you want to wait till after we listen to the song, and then we'll close out?
Okay, yeah, because I can say a little bit about what it said. I'll remember when I hear it.
Okay, all right. It's 2 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, 2 minutes and 40 seconds. We'll play the whole thing.
Okay, yeah, she sings some much more fiery ones sometimes. Yeah, the words are very simple, and she sings so clearly, I could just hear them all. She says, "I have a deep longing in me for you. It whispers a sweet fairy tale in me from you. Heaven is cloudy, and my heart is heavy, and no hope lights my way. I only know I love you so much, and I long for you. I long for you." That's it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's good. Yeah, I am one who likes the more fiery things better, and I like
I almost did that one about Noch nie für Liebe weinen. That's a very fiery one of hers. Never cry for love. But,
well, and like with Hans Albers, I liked the second one we did a whole lot better than the first. Well, because the first one is interesting, but if you don't understand the language, you don't really get it too much. But the second one, when you told the story of, you told us what he was saying in it, and being in 1947, it really had a lot of meaning, and he had, mm-hmm. A lot of strong phrasing in that, and I really liked that one a whole lot.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you really could feel it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Good. Makes me like him a lot. So, well, do you want to sum up in any way about how great the music was in the Third Reich?
Yes, yes. There's a book called Hitler and the Power of Aesthetics, which is one of the ones I got from Interlibrary Loan.
Yeah, I have that book.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Did you say you've read it?
Yeah, and I've used it, too, on some with some, mm-hmm. you know,
oh, good.
Research and so
well,
on.
Well, I thought what was interesting is it's one of those many that you just have to overlook all the things
yes.
they say about butchers and thugs and henchmen mm-hmm. and get to the facts. Mm-hmm. And the facts, you know, that he makes very clear that Hitler's interest in the arts was not at all some trivial thing. It was part of his whole conception of transforming the people in a good way, giving them hope and giving them a sense of themselves and building a society that was good for everyone. It was a very German view, like the quote that I gave you for the heading of this, that high art can transform people, and not necessarily high art, it can be just simple art. That's a view that Friedrich Schiller expressed in an essay on the aesthetic education of mankind. High art changes behavior at a deep level. So that was a fundamental part of, I mean, essential of Hitler's governing. He was an artist first and brought that into
right.
The whole,
he was a real, genuine artist in his being, in his outlook and so on. And he couldn't even help it. I mean, you know,
So
he wanted to incorporate that. Well, it was incorporated into his whole world view, but he thought it was very important to help raise up, allow the German people to have as much exposure to art and culture as possible. And
yes,
of course, that is why he kept all the theaters and so on open all through the war until the very end.
Oh, yeah, and he built many, many opera houses. And, you know, one thing I'd like to mention is, you know, with all the trashing of Germany, starting in the 50s or maybe a little before, all the big American singers just about went to Germany, because the classical singers, because there were 90 opera houses there, and there weren't anywhere near that many in this whole country, and that's where they could get experience. And when Hitler gave discount tickets so everybody could hear the arts, could hear the opera, could hear anything they wanted, pretty much, because the tickets were so cheap, and he sent orchestras to factories. He, as I said before, he gave more. He financed the arts more than anybody since the Middle Ages or Renaissance.
And not just for the rich.
No.
You know, it wasn't an elitist thing.
Not at all. Absolutely. It was his conception of the whole country as a piece of art in a way, but in a deep, deep sense that it should all come together in a harmonious whole.
Yes, and he saw that as a measure of greatness, as a part of greatness. Every great empire and civilization produced great art, and that's what he foresaw for Germany. It's a tragic history.
Yes, you see what preceded it.
Well, Margaret, I thank you so much for doing all this. It was a lot of work for you, and I appreciate it so very much, and I hope we will do it again, and we'll know what doesn't work, what doesn't work and what does work, and won't have the problems that we had this time.
I really enjoyed doing it. I'm really glad we got it up finally.
Yes, me too, and I would like to do more, too. So, ladies and gentlemen, for Margaret and I, we say goodbye for a Saturday afternoon with Carolyn on November 1st, 2014. I'll be back again next week.